Okay, and I think many of you have been following the U.S.-Ukraine war against Russia closely enough to realize now that the United States has had its funds redirected elsewhere to that brave little democracy, as they call it, in the Middle East. Most of our available funds now, as in billions, I think 16 billion was the first draft that was sent over to help the Israelis slaughter humanity, which they're doing with great gusto. And I call that war the U.S.-Israeli war against Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank. We're going to talk about that a little later in this hour. But first up, really a remarkable man. I'm very proud to have him as a friend. He's a friend of yours as well. He's a great journalist. His name is Russell Bentley, born here in America. He's now a Russian citizen, married over there, lives in Donetsk, and he is near the front line. And sad to say, after nearly 700 days now, I guess it's getting close to that, the Ukrainians are still able to fire artillery into Donetsk, targeting men, women, and children. They're still able to do that. It's very disheartening even to hear that. Russell just got back from visiting Moscow and Rostov, and it was quite a good trip. We're going to hear about that as well. Hello, my friend. Thanks for being here. Always great to have you on.
And always great to be with you too, Jeff. Thanks for having me on again. It's been a while, but I'm always glad to talk with you, my friend.
You betcha. How was First of all, how was Moscow before we get into the nitty-gritty here? How was the sen What was the sense of Moscow? I guess they almost got hit by a drone the other day again. Something like
They
that.
do get hit every once in a while by drones. It's the most likely scenario is that there are, as we call them in Russian, diversants, like sabotage units, spies, that are there in Moscow. Ukrops who are
Got it.
doing these attacks. A drone can't fly. It's like, it was a 24-hour bus ride for us from Donetsk to Moscow. So, a drone, these little, shorter range drones can't fly that far. So
No.
probably, the most likely scenario is that, there are Ukrainian, saboteurs, in the Moscow area that are, flying these drones from close to Moscow. Moscow area, it's not getting hit like every day or anything, but it has been hit, and in fact got hit while we were there. But it's not anything at all like in Donetsk, where we're getting hit hard every day. The last few days since we got back have been very heavy shelling here, with Grads, which are like unguided rockets. They shoot 40 of them out of a truck in 20 seconds. Also artillery, also drones. The big thing is now, they have these drones that can drop, they're not like a little Mavic, DJI drone that, for filming. They're big, like agricultural drones, and they can carry like up to six 82 millimeter mortar shells, which are pretty significant bombs. And they're dropping them, they're going over like Petrovsky District, where our house is, and they're targeting civilian areas, they're targeting grocery stores, they're targeting people that are just, there was a case recently where two little teenage girls were standing out in front of a store, and these drones can exactly and specifically and clearly see who they're targeting. And it was a couple of little girls. It was obviously, it wasn't anything military. It wasn't even like, some military age man. It was a couple of girls, man, and they got hit by a drone. And every day, basically, in Donetsk, these drones are flying close to the front, and dropping bombs on civilians. So it's exactly, it's nothing but terrorism, you know?
Of course.
And, there's a lot of parallels between what's happening here in Donetsk and what's happening in Gaza these days.
We'll get to there in a few minutes. Let me ask you a question that I don't think I've ever asked anyone before. It seems to me, and I can't blame this all on leadership, although the UKROP leadership, Zelensky's boys, and Zelensky, I don't know how much they're really at each other's throat or not, it doesn't matter. But how much of this is leadership and how much of it is cultural? Because the Ukrainian military seems to be vicious, ruthless. You just described how they killed two little girls intentionally. They're not at all acting like a civilized fighting force in terms of humanity. There's still rules of war that are supposed to apply. And from what I read, the Russians really hate the Ukrainian soldiers. They don't like most of them. Now, they'll accept surrenders and all that and treat them fairly, but they always do from what I've seen. But there's something going on. The Russians would not be caught dead doing a lot of the shit that the Ukrainian troops do to the Russians and Russian targets. What's the deal with them? Is it cultural? A lot of these guys are conscripts now, and they can't teach hate and inhumanity that quickly. There's something going on. There's a difference in human beings here. What is it? Am I wrong?
No, you're exactly right, Jeff. It's a very important point that people all over the world, and especially in the United States, need to understand. You know, I mean, the U.S. has been promoting so-called Ukrainian nationalism since the end of the Second World War. I mean, it's a historical fact that many of the worst war criminals of the Second World War were Ukrainian Nazi collaborators, Ukrainians that collaborated with the German Nazis when they attacked the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the war, thousands of these most vicious Nazi collaborators were allowed to escape, and they were taken in by the United States and primarily Canada.
Canada too, has
1.4 million Ukrainian, you know, ethnic Ukrainians who are direct descendants of the Nazi collaborators that were allowed to escape to Canada after the Second World War. Chrystia Freeland, who is the deputy prime minister, you know, Trudeau is a clown and a puppet, just like Biden. And it is Chrystia Freeland, whose grandfather was directly and specifically a Nazi collaborator during the Second World War. It's Chrystia Freeland that calls the shots in Canada, you know, just like it's still Obama that calls the shots. I mean, Biden can't find his own ass with both hands, you know. So, you know, he doesn't have any control over anything. It's still Obama that's calling the shots in the White House in the United States. And the same thing in Canada. Chrystia Freeland, the granddaughter of a Nazi, who's the deputy prime minister, but who's wearing the pants there, you know. I mean, Trudeau is a sissy boy who is just there to distract the imbeciles from what's really going on. And so in Canada, they are now, I mean, you know, and this is something that just came out. A friend of mine wrote a very important article about this recently. There's 1.4 million ethnic Ukrainians in Canada. They have a great deal of political power there. And since the special military operation, more than 50,000 Canadian citizens have come to Ukraine to fight in the Ukrainian army. 50,000.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I'll send you the link to the article. I mean, it's it's a real important article, man. You should read it to understand what's going on. And the thing is, these guys, you know, they're not like the usual cannon fodder you know, just thrown to the front to be killed in 6 hours after they get there. These guys are special services, secret services, hit squads. You know, these are assassins, bro. These are, you know, secret agents.
Got it.
And so, you know, Canada has a very strong political connection to the Ukrainian Nazis. And people don't understand that, you know, Canada, part of the UK, of course. So, you know, this it's all coming to the surface now. It's all coming to the surface. You know, that the United States, Canada, Britain, the EU, they're all pro-Nazi. And what's the difference between pro-Nazi and Nazi?
Three letters.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I'm not talking about, you know, the good, normal people in these countries.
Right.
I'm talking about the governments. I'm talking about the people who make the decisions, who set the policies.
We have no more government here in this country, Russell. It's not a government of, by, and for the people. It's of, by, and for the international Klaus Schwab globalist elite, et cetera. We're being taken over. Yeah, go ahead.
Been taken over, bro. And I'll tell you something. For every American, you know, here's all you have to do to understand. Benito Mussolini, the founder of the fascist party in Italy, he once said that fascism should better be called corporatism because it is the merger of state and corporate power.
Military-industrial complex runs the government. It owns it.
That's right, dude. The corporations own the U.S. government. They own the governments of the European Union. They own the Canadian government. And they do what they want for their benefit to the detriment of the people. You know, Alexander Dugin, the great Russian philosopher, whose daughter was murdered by a Ukrainian hit squad a little more than a year ago, he just came out with an article that said the only thing that can save the United States is a total revolution. A total revolution. And he's right. He's right.
I think he's right, too.
I wouldn't argue that. If anyone thinks that Trump is a good guy, that Trump is any different from all the other garbage that rules the United States, if anyone thinks that voting or writing a letter to the editor or going and, you know, marching around in a circle with a sign.
Right. Or sending emails. Uh-huh. Yeah, right.
If they think that's going to do anything, they're fools, period.
Yeah, well,
it's going to take the same kind of work that we did here in Donbass starting 10 years ago to save the United States, if it can be saved. And the thing is, people need to understand that if the American people don't take care of their genuinely, absolutely, literally fascist government, you know, if the Russians have to do it, it's going to be with fire. And
there's no other way to do it, Russell. These people are not going to step down. And I've always said that I think basically they will take the whole world down with them rather than yield power. I don't think they're going to give it up willingly. They're going to have to be destroyed or removed by force somehow. I'm not calling for revolution.
Well, I mean,
here,
you know what? And the
I'm
thing
just saying
is,
it's, they're not going to go away peacefully into that good night. It won't happen.
And you're exactly right about that, brother. I mean, but the thing is, probably 95%, you know, I mean, the whole thing we were talking about before, you know, about, you know, the Ukrainian military being brainwashed and being, you know, totally ruthless Nazis and stuff. I mean, understand this, bro, and this is a very important point, you know. There's people who are ignorant, who don't know what the truth is, and they can act in an inappropriate or even evil way just because they're tricked, just because they're unaware of what the truth is. So a person that's ignorant does not know the facts. A person that is stupid does not want to know the facts.
Well said.
You understand the difference, bro?
Oh,
I mean,
yes. Oh yeah.
Dude, and then this is such an important point, because, you know, once someone does not want to know, and believe me, bro, I've had people tell me specifically, I don't want to know. You know, you talk about, you know, 9/11 or, you know, the virus and the vaccine and all that. And you say, look here, you know, look right here, you know, look at these facts. And they're like, I don't want to know, you know. And so, and these are, you know, people that consider themselves intelligent and educated, and they don't want to know the truth. How stupider than that can you be? You know, and so these people that don't want to know, they're beyond redemption. They're brainwashed to the point, you know, I mean,
right.
They are the worst kind of liars, because they lie to themselves, you know. And I would say that more than 95% of the United States are in that category today. They don't care about the truth. They don't care about morality. They don't care about their souls. All they care about is their next paycheck and their next six pack and the football game coming on, you know. And so that's, you know, that's a tragedy. But the silver lining around this terrible dark cloud is that there's 5% that are aware, that are intelligent, you know, that listen to your show, that find the truth, that want to know the truth. And you know what, bro? That 5% out of 300 million is 6 million people.
It is.
And that's a lot of people, bro. That, you know, that's more people than are in the U.S. Army.
Well, the Revolutionary War, 3%, I think,
that's
is what
right.
the
that's
active
true,
number
bro.
Was.
That's so true. And, you know, and that's what it takes, and that's what it's going to take. And if, I mean, it's a scary thought, but it's also an inspiring and invigorating thought, too, that the future of humanity doesn't depend on Russia. It depends on the 5% of American people that know what's going on, that understand, you know, that listen to your show, that listen to, you know, alternative media, that know the truth, that are not brainwashed, that are not, you know, beyond redemption. It's time for them to get busy now, bro, because it's getting, you know, the hour's getting late, as they say.
It's 11:55 now. We're running out of time. You're right. It's not good here. All right.
I mean,
I have a question. Go ahead. Go.
Okay. Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, I mean, how can any American look at themselves in the mirror and say, I'm an American and I'm proud that Joe Biden is my president?
Honest to God. It's true. How can this be? And I'm so glad that you're so wise about this. This is Obama's third term, for God's sakes. I call Biden, Biden, apostrophe Biden, because it's Obama. And everybody with a brain, really, who cares, knows that now. This is really
being run by
evil people.
And when you think about it, the American people got so shafted. I mean, you know, it used to be considered a conspiracy theory. But, bro, if you really look into it, if you look into the facts, Barack Obama, the word Barack means gift. And he is the half black, born in Nigeria, son of a CIA prostitute. I mean, you know, you ever seen those pictures of Obama's mother in, like, the S&M? You ever seen that?
I don't think
so. The S&M outfits?
I don't think I've seen that one. No, I've seen quite a few.
No.
He's
It's not
dead.
that one. It's a bunch of them, bro. His mom was a CIA operative, like, a honeypot,
I got
Natasha
it.
type,
Yeah.
CIA hooker. And Barack Obama, I mean, he wasn't born. I mean, and I used to think too that this was all like some insane conspiracy theory that somebody was just making up just to be against him because he was, whatever. But bro, I mean, it's like everything, it's like the Federal Reserve, it's like the Rockefellers, it's like 9/11. Once you look into it, you say, you know what? This is all true.
Yeah,
You know,
you can't unsee
and
it.
it's the same thing. And Barack Obama is one of the most, I mean, one of the most evil dudes that has been of, in modern history. And the thing that I've said since JFK, bro, and I was born in 1960. I lived in Dallas when Kennedy was hit. And I've said it since JFK. Every president, U.S. president, has been worse than the one before. And people
It's
don't
fact.
understand how,
It's fact.
truly evil and destructive Obama was. And he's literally, he's still president. You're exactly right about that, dude. I mean, Biden, I mean, he can't remember his own name half the time.
No,
So,
no.
he's
He's
not calling the
dirty.
shots. He's just the puppet for those behind him.
Exactly. Obama is very dirty, very dirty. He's a dark and dirty. This is a bad thing, and he is running the show. Samantha Powers, Susan Rice were, I guess Susan Rice was going to the White House almost every day with, the day's agenda, what to do, and they were hands-on running it. They still are. Oh, Biden is a jerk.
Exactly.
I found two of his body doubles. I identified two of them. There are two at least. There may be more. And I'll send you the story with pictures. You can see it. It's blatantly obvious.
I have seen
And
it,
it's,
dude, and I do understand and absolutely not believe it, but understand that
Yeah,
it's
you know.
true.
That's right. That's right. Obama is, boy, is he dirty, that guy. Did you see the story about his chef allegedly drowning in a paddleboard accident,
Yes, I certainly did.
that's a bunch
I
of
mean,
crap.
it's the Democrats, they have their whole, they have, and it's, I mean, it's again, it's not conspiracy theory. They have professional hit squads that go around and eliminate people that they think are, that know too much, or they think that might talk or whatever like that. And I mean,
It's
it's
true.
beyond dispute.
I know. And the average American, unfortunately, won't accept that. The small percentage of people here that are undeniably wise and well-informed, they can accept, they can get it. But we've somehow this has to be either confronted now and dealt with, or we're done. We are toast. It's going to be over. This is all set up from years and years ago. I have an article I'm going to send you. It was written 2008, I think, and the author's name was Tom Fife. It's called "The First Time I Heard of Barack." And I mentioned it on the program the other night. I think most of you recall that. He was at a dinner in Moscow. He was a scientist, and he was having dinner at another friend, a fellow scientist, a Russian scientist, and the guy's wife worked for, I guess it was the KGB. Maybe FSB, I don't know. And she, at dinner, had too much vodka, and she started talking. And she said to the guy, "Well, what do you, this is Tom, what do you think if I told you you're going to have a black president?" Tom said, "What are you talking about? No way." This actually happened before 2008. And she said, "Yes, and I'll tell you his name. His name is Barack. He's being groomed right now for president." And this is way before his first term. Anyway, I'll send you the article. It's fascinating. Nothing is
I
left to
mean,
chance. Everything is
that's
controlled.
absolutely believable, bro, because I mean, if you look at, the political trajectory of Obama, I mean, he didn't even finish his first term as as senator.
No.
Before they, you know, they're making him, you know, what do you say, selecting him to be run for president.
Nominee.
Yeah.
Yep. No, he was fast-tracked all the way, no doubt. And I mean, here's, you know, the guy's, he's homosexual, whatever. And he marries a guy, Big Mike. And they got, look what they got. We have had a homosexual president, a transsexual vice president. God only knows what the others are guilty of. Well, this country is morally gone. Gone. Just gone. Anyhow, it's disgusting.
It's a spiritual war between good and evil, dude. Between,
you're right.
You know, between God and the devil.
That's it. Exactly. And there's no in-betweens. You are right. Let me ask you to go over. Let's take a look at the Zionist annihilation of at least 20,000 men, women, and children, non-combatants for the most part in Gaza. And the same thing's beginning to ramp up on the West Bank. Hopefully Hezbollah will make a move and not back away from the border in southern Lebanon and confront this, because people don't understand. They're not going to hold Israel accountable for any of this. They start talking about the International Criminal Court and all that war crime. Forget it. Nobody's going to hold them accountable. I think, and I'll shut up here, that every major Arab nation has been contacted, either directly or indirectly, and told that if you get involved with Gaza, with troops and military, you will be nuked. And that's why nobody's doing anything, except the Houthis. They're getting involved in the Red Sea, and they're being supplied by the Iranians, I would guess. But watch for some attacks on American warships. That's all it would take for another Gulf of Tonkin, and we're at war just that quickly. One anti-ship missile takes out a destroyer, escort, or whatever, and we're right there again. And the Gulf of Tonkin never even happened. That's the real irony about that. Anyway, tell us about Gaza and the West Bank and so forth. What do you got?
Okay, well, first of all, I am in contact with serious people in Yemen, the Houthi movement, and, you know, the Houthis and Hezbollah and, you know, what used to be the Wagner PMC are the baddest ass warriors on the planet, because there's two kinds of soldiers, bro. There's those that are willing to kill and those that are willing to die. And Hezbollah and the Houthis and the guys that went through Wagner, many of whom are my friends and my former comrades when I was in the Army here in DPR.
Yeah.
These are guys, I mean, and like myself, dude, when I came here in 2014 to Donbass to join the Army, I didn't come here to be an internet star or a correspondent or a war tourist or anything. I came here to fight in the war against a vastly superior, you know, the fourth biggest army in Europe.
Right.
With the people's militia, basically partisans. I didn't expect to live through the winter, the first winter. I came here in December of 2014. I didn't expect to see the spring. And, you know, but I came here anyway, willing to die. And that's the same thing as the Houthis. That's the same thing as Hezbollah. For them, the greatest honor of life, the greatest aspiration they can have is to be martyred, to die in battle against evil. And, you know, guys like that, you know, they don't surrender. They fight to the last bullet, and then they pick up a knife, and then they pick up a rock if the knife breaks, you know? I mean,
got it.
And the sissy boys of the U.S. Navy, of the U.S. military in general, have exactly zero chance. I mean, the stupidest thing, and which, of course, means it's probably going to happen, but the stupidest thing in the world would be for the U.S. to attack Yemen, the Houthi controlled part of Yemen, which is about 20%. It's the northern and western part of Yemen, which means they control the Gulf of Aden and the southern third of the Red Sea.
Got it.
And all these ships there, I wrote an article. It's on Sputnik International News website. I wrote it yesterday. I published yesterday about this specific thing in the Red Sea. If
What's the title of the article, Russell?
It's called A U.S. Escalation in the Red Sea, a Lose-Lose Proposition.
Yeah, I posted it yesterday. It's been up. It's an excellent, excellent article. Well done.
Thank you, bro. And, you know, and that's the fact, because the thing is, and I've read another article since then about the limitations of the of the missiles, you know, that are protecting this aircraft carrier and these other ships. Man, it's I would not want to be a U.S. Navy sailor on any of those ships.
Understood.
Anywhere around.
I gotcha.
I mean, because the thing is, dude, they're going to be shark bait, because the Yemens, the Houthis will absolutely, you know, they will, they have the technical capability, the military capability to sink U.S. Navy warships in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden, and they will do it. They will do it. They will make sure they do it if the U.S. Navy fires on Yemen. And the thing is, and here's the point. I mean, it shows the, you know, the absolutely criminally insane leadership of the, I mean, and you know what? They're not insane. They're doing it on purpose. This is all part of the depopulation agenda.
Yes, sir. Good.
And you know what? And let me say this, bro, because what's going to happen, or what may well happen, shall I say, as the United States, okay, right now, the Houthis have said, and their word is bond, bro. Their word is good. They said, look, we're not bothering any shipping that comes through the Red Sea and the Suez Canal, which is, you know, it's 12% of all global trade goes through the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. Okay, so, and they're saying, we're not going to touch, we're not going to bother, we're not even going to contact any ships that are going through that aren't connected to Israel. If it's an Israel-owned ship, if it's a ship taking stuff to Israel, then they got a problem. But if it's not Israel-connected, it's, you know, we're not even going to think about it. So, and here's the United States saying, oh, we have to protect global shipping. And that's a lie, bro.
It's a lie. Lies.
They're protecting lies. Israeli shipping.
Exactly.
And again, totally. you know, the tail wags the dog. The Israelis, you know, I mean, it's, you know, the Israelis are getting the United States to do their dirty work.
You got
you know,
it.
To take, yep. to, like a donkey. You know, and you know what, bro? This is nothing new. Because if you remember, and you know what? I am not an anti-Semite. I am not at all against Jewish people. Not at all. I'm a Russian Orthodox Christian, and Jesus Christ was a Jew. So my personal Savior was Jewish.
Understood.
And so, and how can I be against that? But you know what? I also understand and remember that Judas was a Jew. And the Pharisees that demanded that the Romans crucify Jesus Christ were also Jews. So there's a difference between a Jew and a Pharisee. And a Pharisee in modern times, you can call a Zionist, you know? And that's
right.
That's what it is. I mean, the United States, I mean, all you have to do is look at it. You know, the dual citizenship, you know, the number
of... it's so blatant. Russell, let me just sum it up.
So blatant.
Every major power center in this country is either penetrated, co-opted or owned and operated by international Zionism, all right? Use whatever label you want. I don't care. It, from the media to politics to banking, we owe the Zionist banksters who run the Federal Reserve $35 trillion now. We pay $1 trillion a year in interest only on the debt we owe to this international group of bankers, private bankers.
That's exactly right, dude. I was studying up on that just today, and it's only $900 billion
in interest. I know. I'd like to round it off. It's so disgusting. It's crazy. Here's the big deal. The USS Eisenhower is in the Persian Gulf. That's a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier task force, as you well know, and our listeners probably know that. The Gerald R. Ford task force is in the Eastern Mediterranean, just out of reach, allegedly, of most potential trouble in the Israeli area and Gaza. And then we have the Stinson is being moved from Singapore to the Red Sea now. So the USS Stimson is coming over, and there are going to be three nuclear-powered aircraft carrier groups in and around the battle stage. And it's just a matter of time before the Stimson starts launching aircraft under orders to bomb Yemen and the Houthis. They're going to do it, and they're going to get their clocks cleaned because some of those Iranian missiles are very, very effective. They're anti-ship. I think they have hypersonic. So do the Hezbollah troops have hypersonic Russian anti-ship missiles as well. So this thing could blow at almost any time. It's getting worse.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be unpleasant for these Navy pilots, these Top Gun hot dogs, when they take off from an aircraft carrier and go bomb Yemen and then come back and they're... aircraft carrier is under the water and there's no place to land.
Or it's leaning a little bit too far port or starboard. Yes, the USS Stimson is on the way right now with its escort from Singapore to the Red Sea. So there's your immediate TikTok timetable. Speaking of TikTok, the Israeli Defense Forces, or Israeli Occupation Forces as they really are, the IDF, those men are not first-class troops. There may be a few. They're TikTokers. They don't want to be out there. And the casualties that they're suffering are enormous compared to what the Israeli government, the world's number one lying organism, is dishing out. They are really having trouble against the, as you pointed out, soldiers who are not afraid to die. Those Israelis don't want anything to do with dying. They have 5,000 already. No, 10,000. Troops already suffering PTSD. That's an Israeli story. 10,000 already are suffering PTSD. They can't take it emotionally.
Well, I mean, it's it's just like all these American mercenaries that come here to Ukraine and think it's going to be a cakewalk, like some movie or something. And then, they start, go up against real Russian soldiers and they're like, well, we don't want anything to do with this. Let's get out of here right now. You know, I mean, the reality is different from the movie. And, and the reality is that, the IOF, the Israeli Occupation Force, and the U.S. military are really paper tigers compared to people that have, a moral and political and religious conviction, right. who are really on the side of truth, who are on the side of history, who are on the side of God, that say, look, I'm fighting against evil. I'm not afraid to die to fight against evil. And, that's the strength of the people of the Donbass People's Republic. I mean, how do you think we survived against the Ukrainian army for 8 years before the Russians finally came in? It was because we're defending our own homes. We're defending our own families. We're defending our own history and our own principles. And, you know, it's, you know, every invading army, every soldier in every invading army, you know, even if they're completely brainwashed, down deep, they understand they're the bad guys. That they don't have any right. I mean, you know, and it goes all the way back to, you know, I mean, you know, in my lifetime, it was Vietnam. You know, when I was a young teenager and the Vietnam War was still going on in the 60s, you know, and I'm, you know, I go to the library, you know, and I'm seeing all this stuff on the news about people being against the war. And I go to the library and I'm like, oh, it's the prison poems of Ho Chi Minh.
Right.
You know, and I start understanding that, you know, this guy's basically saying, hey, it's our country. Who are these dudes that are coming here from somewhere else with, you know, guns and bombers and tanks and stuff like that? Uh-huh. We have the absolute, absolute right to self-defense. There is no more basic and primary right than the right to self-defense. If someone attacks you, you have the right to hit back.
You do that over here now, and if you're hitting back at the wrong people, you're arrested for murder or attempted murder if you defend your home. Believe it or not, that's how bad it's gotten here. The courts here are many of them are just horror chambers. Awful.
Yeah, bro, believe me, it's difficult for me to keep up with the news of what's happening in the USA today, but sometimes, I can't believe what I see, bro. I can't believe it.
It's, I know, like, I can't either, believe me. It's horrible. I have to clarify something. I said that wrong. The Stimson is a nuclear submarine. I always get it confused with the Carl Vinson. And USS Carl Vinson, V-I-N-S-O-N, is the one on the way. I don't know where the submarine's going, but the Carl Vinson task force is headed toward the Red Sea. That's the trigger point I think we may well see happen. And it could be within a week or two. You never know. But I do think you're right. I think we're going to attack Yemen, start to bomb from the carrier, and its support ships are going to use other weapons, of course. They're going to start to try to punish the Houthis. Big mistake. I don't think it's going to work. They're going to get their clocks cleaned. That would be my guess.
Well, I mean, there, you know, if the U.S. Navy sends jets or sends missiles against Yemen, against the Houthi liberated areas of Yemen, then their ships will sink. And it will be, you know, it will be the biggest death of U.S. military personnel
since World War II.
Oh, yeah. Since World War II, bro. And
well, the carrier, the Carl Vinson, has, I think, 5,000 men and women on board, something like that. That's a normal compliment for a nuclear-powered carrier.
Mm-hmm.
The Carl Vinson.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the destroyers and cruisers that are there to protect the carrier, you know, they have at least 1,000. You know, I mean,
something like that.
And people.
Yep.
You know, people, you know, they remember, or at least intelligent people remember, you know, the episode of Black Hawk Down, you know, in Somalia.
Yeah.
Back in the day where, like, you know, 25 American soldiers got killed in one battle, you know. And, of course, you know, and Somalia is right across the strait from Yemen, you know. I mean, those guys don't mess around either, you know.
So I've heard. Russell, real quick, what's your take on the future course of combat and death in Gaza? The Israelis are being fought very, very viciously by these fighters who are antithetical to the Israeli occupation forces. These men are not afraid to die. They're out there on the streets with these RPGs, they're 150 millimeters something or another. They made themselves, mm-hmm. and they're knocking out Merkava tanks, APCs, they're knocking out a lot of stuff. This is a real fight in there. What do you see
happening?
Well,
I mean, First of all, I would say that the defenders of Gaza are not fighting viciously; they're fighting heroically.
Heroically, I got it. I got it.
Mm-hmm. And you know, and second of all, very effectively. You know, I mean, if you go back and you look at what happened on the 7th of October, it's obviously it was a false flag.
Oh, painfully obvious. Yeah, don't even waste your breath on it.
Painfully obvious.
Painfully.
You know, in the days before, I mean, first of all, Hamas has been funded with hundreds of billions of dollars, not by Israel, but that Israel, you know, went to other Arab countries, the UAE, Kuwait, like that, and said, look, right. You know, give Hamas some money. Hamas was basically formed in order to be a competition or alternative to the PLO, the Palestine Liberation Organization, you know, Yasser Arafat.
That's right.
You know, the famous guy. And so Hamas is somewhat a compromised, you know, at the top levels, you know, compromised organization. The guys that are fighting against the Israeli invaders, you know, are very heroic, very good, very serious fighters. But Hamas, you know, Israel pulls some strings in Hamas. You know, they were
well,
told
they helped
by
create
Egypt.
It, of course. Yes.
Yeah, they were told by the Egyptian intelligence services, they were told by the U.S. intelligence services that something serious was getting ready to kick off. You know, the Israeli government absolutely knew it was coming. And what do? They withdraw a whole regiment of soldiers from the front lines along the border. They allow this, you know, this hippie rave thing to go on, you know. I mean, you know, within, you know, walking distance of the border, many of the people who were killed on the, you know, exact day of October 7th were killed by, you know, the Israeli military, not by Hamas.
Correct. I've covered
you know,
that
I mean,
in great detail, and you are correct. We got it covered.
Dude, I've looked
yes.
into it, too. And anyone yep. that's intelligent and looks into it will understand this. You know, so... You know, this was, I mean, it's a false flag, you know. It was allowed to happen to give the excuse for what the genocide that Israel is doing now against the people of Gaza, the Palestinians, whose land it really is. You know, and so where's it going to go from here? You know, it's a coin toss, you know. Either, you know, supposedly the U.S. has told Israel, you know, The slave has told its master that they have to stop by the end of the year, you know.
Right. Right.
And we'll see if that happens or not. If it doesn't, then, you know, if the United States takes military action against Yemen, against the Houthis, the Houthis will sink a U.S. Navy ship in the Red Sea or the Gulf of Aden. And, you know, then where does it go from there? You know, I mean, they, you know, the United States can't invade Yemen. You know, the U.S. proxies in Saudi Arabia have been fighting for 10 years to try and, you know, defeat the Houthis without success. You know, so, and Saudi Arabia is, I mean, Saudi Arabia, you know, the United States, they said to all the Arab countries, hey, let's form this coalition to protect the Red Sea. And only Bahrain, which is a tiny island, you know, which is, you know, I mean, the population of Bahrain is like, you know, it's like the population of Donetsk or something, you know. I mean, it's ridiculously small, and they've said that they'll do it, but no other Arab country is going to be, at least officially and publicly, in this Red Sea, you know, protecting the shipping lane thing that the United States. And so... The Saudis ain't going back into Yemen. You know, the United States cannot bring troops halfway around the world to invade Yemen. That's a zero possibility chance. And the United States can't even defend its own ships in the Red Sea. So,
no.
You know, it's a lose-lose situation. You know, and to be honest, I don't think they're stupid enough to actually do that, because, you know, to be smacked, you know, to lose thousands of sailors, you know, by the Yemens. I mean, and the thing is, too, if they start to win against Yemen, against the Houthis, Iran will come in, you know. Iran will come in.
I think you're right. I think you're right. All right, we're just about out of time. I got to get one more question in here. How much more, there's our music, but how much more are we going to see in terms of this war against the horrible government in Kiev by the Russians? Are the Russians going to just kick back pretty much and play defense? I know they're moving along the line of contact quite a bit now. How much longer can the Ukrainians even pretend to be a viable fighting force with no arms, few people? I don't know if you saw that video real quick of that woman in the trench, a Ukrainian conscript, a woman, and she was calling for evac. We need evac here. We got everybody's dead,
yes,
but three
I
of us.
Yes, I saw that, dude.
Yeah.
I'll tell you how it's going to end, bro. It's going to end in Kiev with the unconditional surrender of the Ukrainian government, and then everything from Kiev eastward is going to be liberated and under the protection and direction of Russia. And
got
Russia
it.
Is going to make a deal. They're going to say to the Hungarians, the Polish, and the Romanians, take whatever you want from the West. We don't care about that. Don't mess with us. It's going to be a decisive victory. It might be in 2024. But they're going to, Russia is going to take its time. They're, you know, they're done, spending troops on, offensives that don't work. Ukraine has already lost the war. It's just going to be a matter of getting to Kiev and then saying, all right, sign the surrender.
Great. All right, Russell, thank you. We got to run. Talk to you soon. Have a Merry Christmas. Take care of yourself.
You too, man.
Okay, brother.
God bless. Good luck.
Thank you. Good night, Russell.
Bye-bye.
All right. Russell Bentley, live from Donetsk. Back with you tomorrow. Take care.